C-158, number 2B.
Whose heart is near to divine truth and love? Only the man whose heart is near to divine truth and love can pray aloud. The man whose heart is full of lack and sickness and despair and so on can't pray aright. Only the fullness can pray aright. The man of deep and conscientious protests of man's likeness to God and of man's unity with truth and love. Or the man who is absent from the body and present with the Lord. See how wonderful a sense we get if we just put first the problem out of sight. Say, that cannot be improved. That's no factor in the science of being. If I want to demonstrate reality, I have to go out from reality, from man who is present with the Lord, whose ego is present with truth and love, she says, shutting out erring sense, who rejoices in secret beauty and bounty. See, that's only the right petitioner. Who rejoices in secret beauty and bounty. That alone can pray to God aright. Then, when she has said that aright, the petitioner, then what she does also is that she gives us a true sense of the petitioned of God. Because right at the beginning of the chapter, in the first subject, she presents God in a sevenfold way in a sevenfold way in its fullness, and therefore shows that God for us is not an unknown. We know him as mind, she says, who forms and governs and exalts our thoughts before they take form in words and action. That God is spirit, who is always blessing all and always returning good. That God is soul, she says, unchangeable, that doesn't change. That God is principle, that it is the science of harmony. That God is life, which is pouring forth more than what we are already able to accept. That God is truth, who is doing already right, without that we give him advice, he is doing right. That God is love, who has fulfilled the work and does not need to first fulfill it, gives a clear sense of the petition, of the nature of the petition, what he is doing, and shows him in doing everything in its fullness. Unconditioned fullness. Then she puts aright the means through which the petitioned can contact how the petitioner can commune with the petitioned. And in presenting the means through the seven subjects, we see that these means are never, as in theological prayer, that they are never literal, never material, never ritual, never theological, never dogmatical, never outward. But that is the only means through which the petitioner can be in communion with the petitions are of the same nature as God himself. That they are always mind-like means, spirit-like means, soul-like means, principle-like means. Can you see that? That the means through which we reach mind, she says, is, for instance, mind-like, namely an open mind, a seeking mind, and the mind of deep, holy desire. That the means, how we can commune with spirit, are spirit-like. That these means are spirit-like, namely through the qualities of spirit, like devotion, spiritual worship, meekness, patience, obedience, and so on. How the, in the third subject, Hauser shows that the means through which we can reach soul must be soul-like, not foreign to soul, soul-like, namely of the same nature as soul, namely selfless, of the Christ nature, of the Christ selfhood, that only that can reach soul. And so in principles, he shows in the fourth subject that only principle-like means can reach principle, can contact and touch principle, namely principle-like qualities, like a principled attitude in everything, honesty. Then in the fifth, she shows that only we can come into contact with life, which is God, through life-like qualities, like, as she shows, deep, consecrated, spiritual understanding of the one life. Or in truth, she says it's only through truth-like qualities, namely through a spiritual consciousness, which shuts out material consciousness, which is absent from the body but present with the Lord. It's the affirmation of that which is true and shutting out that which is erroneous. Only that mean is able to reach truth. And in the last one, in love, she shows that only love-like qualities can reach love, namely that sense of beauty and bounty and fulfillment, which, and the sense of how love meets all human needs. So we see, you see, in this way she sets the means of prayer right. And how does she set them right? By bringing them again only into line with the divine. So we have already three things which are of the same nature. It's man, the petitioner, which must be of God's nature, the petitioned God, whose nature she explains, and as God's nature. And the means are again of the same nature, namely of divine nature, of God-like nature. It's always the same, see, of the same nature. And therefore she also shows the fourth, namely the reward of prayer. She says that reward is can only be of the same nature as God himself, and never of another nature. When we consider and go through the whole text of the chapter on prayer and ask ourselves, well, what is the result, what is the reward which comes out of a prayer? She doesn't say, well, the reward is then you will get a better job, then you will get the house, then your friend will be again kind with you, and then this and then that. It's quite interesting to ask, what does she say then is the reward? And it's always the same. She always says, it's the blessing of God. Quite in a general way, always say, it's the divine blessing. What is it, that divine blessing? Well, it can only be the nature of God. That what we get in a true prayer is only the nature of God, never the material world. And so, again, the fourth is of the same nature. And you come, you see, now if we consider these four factors of a prayer, that they are all of one nature. All of one nature. They are all of the nature of God. In which, to repeat again, in which we see that the prayer is only answered if we pray aright. This is that it says, the world must grow to the spiritual understanding of prayer. We must free ourselves from a theological sense of prayer, from a common sense of prayer, from a traditional sense of prayer, as we have been taught as children in the cradle already. We say that that we have to free ourselves from that and get to the spiritual understanding of prayer. What is that spiritual understanding of prayer? That spiritual understanding of prayer corrects every one of these four factors of a prayer. It corrects us to say that we as a man of lack should go and approach God and near and get near to God. It corrects that and says, God is too pure of an eye that he can behold evil. If you want to get in communion with God, you jolly well have to be of the same nature as God. Because he is of one nature, he is not a duality. He is of one nature and therefore he can only perceive and he can only understand what is of his own nature. He can't understand his opposite. He doesn't know his opposite, he can't understand his opposite, he can't commune with his opposite. So we jolly well have to change ourselves first. Which means, let's get the full sense of man behind our back. Let's look and to God as the man of wholeness. Let's go to God from a standpoint of wholeness. Think what that would mean. Think of what that would mean if we would take that. What the freedom, what the liberation would take place if in every case we just can put the whole thing behind us and say, well, if I want to have an answer from God, I can have one. But to pray right is first to get to the spiritual understanding of prayer. What is the spiritual understanding of prayer? That man is God's own likeness. That's the petitioner. Man is God's own likeness. I can approach God and I know who God is. I know his nature. Wonderful. I can be sure about it. I can be certain about his nature. I can adore that nature. I can rejoice over that nature. I can be certain over that nature. I know that nature is of eternality and indestructible. But we have quite a wonderful view before us. And then I can see that in order to get into contact and into spiritual communion with this one God, I can do that through God-like natures, through God-like qualities. I know that. Therefore, I know that every prayer will be answered which tries to approach God on a God-like nature, on a mind-like nature. Namely, if my heart really desires to know God as he is, the first subject, and I know that prayer will be answered. I know that if I approach God's spirit-like nature, namely through that which is reflecting the nature of God, so the spiritual qualities which reflect God, adorable one, by adoring the bigness and greatness of this vision of God, by adoring that, by seeing the bigness of it, what it can do and will do, or through the soul-like nature, which has in oneself that complete willingness to be reformed, to let oneself be reformed, not to obstruct anything which does not want to be transformed and reformed, which is willing to accept the Christ-like selfhood. That is a means that touches soul and therefore has a reward. And so with the fourth subject, I know that the prayer which goes out from a sense that man is a principled idea and that it cannot help but be obedient in principle and therefore shows forth intellectual and scientific honesty, that has an answer. It has an answer. What the answer is, I don't know yet, but it has an answer. And so in the fifth subject, he shows that if I approach God not as a petitioner of human belief, but as a petitioner of spiritual understanding. And if I approach God, as he shows there, not as a corporeal being, but as spirit, God, a spiritual being, And if I approach that through the lifelike qualities, namely of deep living consecration and devotion, that has an effect. That it has a reward. And so in the sixth, she shows that again, and shows that the world of error is separate from the world of truth. So if in consciousness I make that separation, if in consciousness I affirm the nature of truth and reject the nature of error and the arguments of error, if I am absent from the body and I am present with the Lord, if I go into the sanctuary of spirit, and if I do close the door on sinful error, and I do shut out all the arguments of error, then, she says at the end, then prayer is answered. Because, again, all revolves within one's own nature, within their own realm. The petitioner is of the realm, is of the nature of God. God is of the nature of God. The means is of the nature of God. And the blessing is of the nature of God. And that's really a very important point. Because, let's be quite clear again about that point. Because the human mind really would like to pray in order to see one's own wishes fulfilled. Because we would like to see something being demonstrated in the way as we feel it would be right and nice and wonderful and big and I don't know what. But it's a human concept of what the effect should be. And that's something which I don't think one can convey to the other, but which everyone can once think about it for oneself. Something of the biggest experience in life, of the biggest spiritual adventure in life, is to be willing to see that if these first three elements of a prayer are obeyed, that one is completely willing to take the result, the reward that flows out of that as the biggest thing that God can bestow. That's an adventure. Because that which God will bestow as a result of it is of such different nature than what human outlining and wishing is conceiving, that at first we don't see it and we can't measure it aright. That's why afterwards comes Atonement and Eucharist, where it says, but the world couldn't measure it aright. The world couldn't measure one single component part of Jesus aright, because it understood it not and could see it not. But its influence was on all mankind. Now, that's the adventure of love. That's the adventure of love. And I will come back to this point perhaps tomorrow also in another connection, because I feel that we must gather the bigness and greatness of character and outlook and manhood, which is willing to accept the bestowals of love, which comes out of this attitude of prayer, that we receive that bestowal as the biggest thing God can give. If we consider it as the smallest and the unimportant and very unpretentious and so on, no, that's not the right word, unpretentious, smallest and so on, then we belittle deity. Why? Now, come back again to this question of prayer. Prayer is the oneness. There is only one being. There is only one being. Now, this being is not one mass. It has categories, it has classifications, it has subclassifications, and so on. Here, we are considering four classifications of this one being in prayer. we have been. Namely, that in this one being, we are approaching in our wholeness God. And only the wider we span our wholeness, the nearer we can get to God. We are approaching who? God. Well, who is God? Is God a little thing or is He big? Well, we are approaching the whole of being. We are never approaching a little part of being. If as a whole man we pray to God and open our thought to God, we open it to the whole of God and not to a little bit. And what can flow out of this one God? A little bit? No, it can't. You can never have a whole out of which comes little, or a part. The whole is only giving forth its own nature, and that is whole. Something which is great can only give out something which is great, never something which is little. Something which is abundant can only give out abundance, never something which is small and little. It's the human mind that has made all these distortions, all this illogical thinking that out of God, which is only a term for wholeness, could flow out something small and little and insignificant. That's illogical. Out of wholeness can only flow the whole. And out of bigness can only flow bigness. And therefore, I am sure that out of our work, which to our best abilities we have, we approach the wholeness of being in its wholeness and greatness, there is flowing something out which is so big that we don't see it. That's my conviction. That through these years and through the coming years, something is going to is already happening, which we really can't perceive and can't value properly. If we have not that spiritual insight of pure logic and science, which can measure it spiritually. Which can measure it spiritually instead of materially. The theological sense of prayer always wants to measure the reward materially. And from our limited sense. And that's not prayer. That's not prayer. Now, this is something we have to carry in our bosom, to carry in our heart, and to be clear about it. Because only in this way we can open really the womb of infinitude, of the womb of God's bigness. If our sense is small, well, the birth will be toilsome and full of trouble and full of travail. In every birth, even in the material, we must be willing not to resist to open the womb, to be willing to open it as wide as possible, and the birth will be big and harmonious. And what is lacking is usually that we are impressed by the old theological sense, which is little. It goes out from a little man to a little God through small means and wants as a reward, little rewards. Just a job or just this and just that and so on. Never God. Never the wholeness of God. Our reward, that's why you just take the text and look it through and read it through and make you some notes. What does Mrs. Eddy say in that chapter? What will be the reward? She never says the reward will be that your headache will be no more there and that you will get a better job and that your business contracts will be all right and that you will earn a better income next year and so on. Never, 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 never. Her bestowal is much bigger. It's God's own bestowal. God's own blessing. It's the bigness of God. And that's why, and if we can't see that properly, you see, we will be always dissatisfied about our prayers. Always. Because we will always find that we have not prayed aright and that our prayers are ineffective and that they don't do the job and we are depressed that we don't understand anything about God. And it's a pity. Because what we are doing is a million times bigger than what we measure. I'm sure about it. I know it. I know it. It's a million times bigger. You see, in every age that ever was, the age could never measure his own age right. The age of Jesus could not measure in the slightest aright what was happening. If in the age of Jesus somebody would have said to somebody, to anybody in Jerusalem, would have said, this man there who walks around and talks to a few people and so on and has not even a bed to sleep in and not even a house which he owns, that man is going to put up a new calendar and the whole world will measure time according to his birth. Everybody would have laughed and put you right into an insane asylum. Right away. Right away. Now, every age can never fathom what is happening in that age. Never. Except perhaps one or two or a few. The age of the prophets never could fathom what was happening. The age of round about 700, 600 BC in the whole world where the big religion were formed, not only in Judah but also in other parts of the world where the big, they could never fathom that they were witnessing the birth of religion which would last over thousands of years and which would give an impress on millions and millions and millions of people through thousands of years. They would never have seen that. Never. We must be quite clear that the age in which we live can never measure aright what's happening in that age. Why? Because it's uninspired. And only when we look away from a limited sense and a material sense and the worldly sense of things, we can perhaps touch the lines and the outlines of what's happening. And what's happening today is the same thing big. And everybody can be perhaps depressed and can feel there's nothing happening and nothing much happening and so on. I'm not in the slightest. I feel awfully happy. I'm terribly happy what's going on. Something big. Something much bigger than we can fathom. But we can see that if we pray. If we pray aright. If we pray aright, that is, if we pray from the point of view of man in its wholeness, to a whole God, through God-like means, and see that only God-like rewards are bestowed of God. And God-like rewards are big. They are jolly big. And we try to kill that child every time it comes. We try to be the red dragon in the apocalypse that tries to swallow up that child ere it is born. Why? Because woman must give it birth. Thinking can't. Woman